You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. This is the Ink Stud Show, or the radio show where we talk about comics. This week I'm featuring a bunch of short little interviews I did at the latest Comics and Stories Convention at Heritage Hall with a group of fine select cartoonists, all of which I'm a big fan of, and I think you should be a big fan of, too. Sorry for the crappy quality interviews we did in the garage, or in the kitchen in the back of the Heritage Hall, and it's not very quiet in there, so there's a lot of echo and fridge noises, and then people walking in while we're doing interviews. It was a fun con. Farrell Dalrymple was a charm to have in town, and he's a great guy, and his art is gorgeous. Be sure to check out his stuff, and check out all the different artists that I have featured in the interview. Let's see if I can remember them off the top of my head. Stephanie Blakely, Ken Bosom, Steve LeCouliard, Phil Barrett, and Carrie McKay. There we go. All of them are fabulous, talented folks, and I'll have links featured in inkstuds.com with all their different websites and maybe some examples of their art. Next week, I'll be talking to Chris Starros and Brett Warnick from Top Shelf Books about their 10th anniversary, 10 years of being on the top shelf. Listen to Inkstud, CITR 101.9 FM, and I'm talking with Ken Bosom, who stuck him out from the back, into the back of the Comics and Stories Con at Heritage Hall. Now, you have a whole slew of minis here you're selling. Is it 1918, and then The Village?
Yeah, 1918 is actually a sort of booklet version of a piece that I did that was in the SPX anthology in 2003.
Oh, nice.
Which led the influenza pandemic in 1918. And I had the good fortune that it came out at the same time that SARS was happening.
Awesome!
Yeah, as I was working on it, SARS started happening, and I'm like, oh my god, this is horrible for everyone but me.
How did you get into the whole idea of doing a comic about the influence? Like, that's
Well, that year, the SPX anthology was doing the travel-themed anthology.
That's the one with the Jaime cover, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so I didn't want to do just like a vacation story or something, and so originally I was going to do something about HIV and sort of the history of HIV and AIDS, and then that was just too complex and sort of a bit not really concrete enough. There's a lot of stuff that's still sort of very theoretical, and
it's a big beast.
Yeah, and then I started thinking about the influenza pandemic, and then when I started researching it, there was, at that time, there was very little written about it. There was almost no reference to it in a lot of history books, even though it killed more people in all the combat of World War I.
Well, half, a lot of the combat, you want to understand, the combat deaths near the end was actually just flu deaths.
Yeah, a lot of flu deaths were written up as combat deaths and that kind of thing, so yeah, they don't actually have a hard-to-pass number.
What I understand about the 1918
influenza, it was a result of a mixture of the germs with the Americans coming in and saving the day, quote unquote, their germs mixing with the French and the German germs.
Yeah, well, they tracked it back to a military base in the States, which was where the first outbreak was, and then basically the soldiers from that base, within a few days of them burning this pile of pig waste, started all getting sick, and then so they figure it leapt from pigs to humans at that point. And then those soldiers basically went on their tour of duty. It mutated through their travels and then came back as an even deadlier version of the virus, and then traveled everywhere. But yeah, everybody called it the Spanish flu, except the Spanish called it the French flu.
The poor Spaniards.
The poor Spaniards. They're always getting it back now. But yeah, so that came out around the same time SARS was happening, so then McLean's did a little piece about it, so that was sort of my first book.
So what kind of comic stuff did you do before then? Because getting the XPX anthology when they were doing it, it wasn't a small feat.
No, I just sort of had horseshoes up my butt, I guess. I had been away from doing comic stuff for a while. I was teaching high school and feeling like I was dying a slow, lingering death. Because I wasn't doing a lot of creative work. And decided I would get back to doing it. And the 1918 thing was the first piece I had done for probably 2 or 3 years.
Nice.
And I did it specifically to try and submit it to SPX, and then got in. So I was just really lucky. Yeah.
Have you ever actually made it out to SPX?
No, I didn't get to go the year that I was in it. So I haven't made it that time. Yeah, so that was sort of the first big thing I did. And then I did a few different minis. And then about 2 years ago, Extra West, the game lesbian paper, did approach me about doing a regular strip. They did a story about me with a different character of mine on the cover, and asked if I'd be interested in doing that as a strip. And I said, well, no, I had this other idea, which was The Village. And so The Village is sort of a, I think of it kind of as a comic strip. If HBR Showcase did a comic strip, it's set in the baby village. So
for those that don't know, because it's international listenership, it's our version of the Castro.
Yeah, sort of like Vancouver's Castro. So it's a complete panoply of sexualities in terms of characters. There's straight characters, there's gay characters, there's a little bit of everybody.
Which is really reflective of Davy Street.
No,
like
it totally
it's not,
is,
strictly ghettoized population.
Well, it's less and less gay every day, too, because a lot of people are buying the property out further out where they can afford it and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting little neighborhood, and I think partly because of the gay angle, you get a weird sort of cross-section of people that you wouldn't normally get put together. So, like if you go out to a gay bar at night, you'll get a big cross-section. There'll be doctors, there'll be working class guys, and gay is just sort of the common denominator.
Yeah.
But it creates a situation where you have all these people who would never normally interact socially, who are all forced to interact socially just because of that one thing.
Yes. Now, you've been doing that for a couple of years now.
Yeah, it's first year anniversary just before Christmas. And then I picked it up in Ottawa, so just started running in Ottawa as well a couple months ago.
Oh, nice. And what kind of response have you gotten from that?
Really good response. Everybody seems to be really into it. It's kind of, I actually live just around the corner from the Davie Village, so it's kind of, I keep getting people coming up and going, okay, so that guy who was in the last strip, that's totally a real person, right? And I'm like, no, I made them up. No, they come in here for coffee all the time, I swear. And I'm like, yeah, no, they're coming.
Just playing with stereotypes?
Yeah. Well, it's just, they're all sort of composites, and some of them are composites that include certain people that are around the neighborhood, so there's kind of a flavor of somebody who doesn't look at all directly like that person, but definitely you could see the person go, oh, I don't know. Yeah.
Nice. Now, what kind of comics were you influenced by doing, like, getting into it? Because I'm curious.
Like, what were sort of my influences?
Yeah.
Well, when I was growing up, I was more of a DC boy than not, I guess. I think when I was growing up, everybody kind of made the leap from, like, Richie Rich and Casper to Archie, and then you kind of made the leap from that as you got older into superhero stuff. And so, yeah, so I grew up being more of a DC boy, a little bit of Marvel here and there, but kind of most bigger artists from the 80s in terms of that, I guess, like George Perez or John Byrne or that kind of stuff. I like Brian Bonnand. I tend to like guys who are really detail-oriented.
He's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he's pretty awesome. I'm always blown away by his stuff now that I found out that he does everything on the computer now.
Does he?
Yeah, he's done everything on the computer for like 10 years or something, and all those fine, wispy little hairlines are all done
with the tablet.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't have the capacity.
Stick with a pen and paper.
I do. I have one little sort of scene child book called How to Cure a Broken Heart in 12 Easy Steps. It's the only thing I've ever done completely on a computer, but it's all very... It's kind of like an instruction manual for your broken heart. It looks like a little VCR repair manual.
Oh.
It's in four different languages even. It's got all the little language things. And the illustrations are all very kind of washroom door stick man, but I did them all on the computer.
Just so you could say it didn't.
Just so I could say it didn't.
Now, have you... there's not a lot of gay comics, I've noticed, in the thing. So has it been kind of... need getting response from people being able to like identify with the comic?
I find it interesting in a few different ways. There's actually a fair number of gay cartoonists doing stuff. There's actually a website called prismcomics.org that is sort of like a clearinghouse for queer cartoonists all over. And even in town here, I'm only one of, I think, three gay cartoonists in Vancouver.
Patrick Fillion.
Four, counting Patrick Fillion, actually.
Okay.
Yeah, I was thinking of newspaper stuff. yeah, so there's Patrick Fillion, John Crossan does sort of an editorial cartoon, and there's another cartoonist named Tyler Dorchester, who does a strip called The Brotherhood, that also runs an Extra West. They're actually doing a panel of queer cartoonists at the Word on the Street this year, apparently.
Which hopefully will happen.
Sadly, I won't be there, because my brother's getting married that weekend.
Mazel tov.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And you have a website that you can check stuff out at?
Yeah, I have a website for the Village Comic Strip. And I have a website for Barking Raven Press that's the imprint that they do all my stuff on there.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I will list it on the site. This is us, Ken Bosom, chatting about 1918 in the Village. Listen to CITR 101.9 FM. This is CITR 101.9 FM from Vancouver, Inkstuds Radio Show. I'm still at the Comics and Stories Convention at Heritage Hall talking with some of the local cartoonists here and my latest guy here, Steve LeCouliard. Did I get it right?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah! With your new first-time comic exposure, Much the Miller's Son, The Good, the Bad, the Much. Or And Much.
Yep.
Why not The Much?
I experimented with the much, but I just...
just doesn't flow?
It didn't flow, yeah.
So, you're very extremely well-rendered, so you've got a little background in animation, I'm presumptuously presuming.
Yes, I'm also wearing a Lupo the Butcher t-shirt, so that might have tipped you off a little bit. I work in storyboards.
Okay. And it's pretty natural translation to comics.
Actually, not as natural as you'd probably think, because it's an completely different skill set, really, because of the difference between storyboards, which are actually still frames of film, which is supposed to be seen as 24 frames a second, and supposed to one image is only going to be seen at a time, whereas comics are... the whole page is seen at once. You use space to translate into time, and you can convey a lot more with the spacing between panels. So, yeah, they're very different. Not nearly as similar as they were.
With this being your first comic output, you've been reading your homework then? The Scott McCloud stuff? And
I have read, I've read a few of Scott McCloud's books. But it's more just like through trial and error I found that how much, you know, difference there is. Like, I've seen other storyboard artists do comics, and it feels like a storyboard because of the way they cut to things and use, you know, two frames for the same action, that kind of thing.
So you're trying to do something a little more smooth? And...
Yeah, well, I'm heavily influenced by things like Asterix and Obelix and European comics in general, and newspaper strips. I'm a huge fan of Walt Kelly and Bill Watterson. So yeah, like, I mean, I learn as much as I can from those guys. Try to treat comics as comics, not just, you know.
So what is Butch the Miller's Son?
It's based on the legends of Robin Hood. Much the Miller's Son is a minor character in the stories. He shows up in every version of the story. And I just decided to tell the story from his point of view. Basically, just an ordinary peasant, not very impressive, not very smart, or not very... athletic or anything, who's just gets caught up among a band of outlaws, and how he's dealing with the situation. He falls hopelessly in love with Maid Marian. Who wouldn't? He basically just gets taken advantage of by everybody else because he can't defend himself. He's just a small, you know, kind of sad little guy. Yeah.
Now, you've got a blog if you want to check out your comics, right?
Yes, it's got a really ungainly name. It's called whatiwantablogfor.blogspot.com.
Which will be linked through the Inkstuds website.
Oh, excellent. Check out. That'll make it a lot easier to find, I'm sure.
Do you have this in any stores yet? Or
no,
is this your first?
Yeah, this is my first go. I want to see how it would do. And hopefully I'll put out a different edition probably.
Okay, so you're not going to bring this to like Lucky's or RX?
Not this version. I think I'm going to do a little better. I've got more pages done now.
Okay.
And also I want to actually put a price on the cover and stuff like that.
That'll help.
Yeah.
What made you want to do this comic? Because, you know, you're doing the animation, which pays a bling.
Because comics are my first love. That's the thing I really like to do.
Yeah.
I love animation too. But it is a very collaborative endeavor, and it involves a lot of people and a lot of money, so it's very hard to get your creative voice heard. Some people have done it. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great standouts. There's the Don Hertzfelds and
the
Mike Judges and the John Kays and Danny Antonucci, of course. And that's really great, but for me, I think comics are the best way to express what I want to express and just do it all myself.
Well, that's why Kim Dietnerwin's animation was his ad said you can tell a great story, but you're never going to tell the story you want.
Yeah, yeah. Also, I've heard Jim Woodring has said that when he worked in the animation industry in the 70s, that they were like hiring racehorses and grinding them up for dog food. And the animation industry is not that bad anymore, but it does still kind of feel like that. There's way more talent than ever gets shown on TV.
I can tell. I mean, look at those flight books, and there's just...
Oh, yeah. There's some incredible people, yeah.
Cool. And you're going to try and make it down to Stumptown, I understand, possibly?
That's my plan, if I can find some people to go with and room with.
Some homies for the journey.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens. Maybe it'll be at Stumptown. People can check them out there. If not, I guess there's word on the street just the same weekend if you don't make it down there and you're in Vancouver. And more comic stores, check it out. Probably Lucky RX and
more.
Yeah, that's the point.
Nice. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
ITR 101.9 FM. Here I am, still at the Comics and Stories Convention, talking to more cool artists. This one is Steph Blakely or Stephanie? Steph or Stephanie?
Stephanie Blakely.
Okay, Blakely. I said Blakely. Sorry.
Everybody does. I'm sorry. It's okay.
And your comics are Comics by Steph. And the latest one was
Unfamiliar Cleavage.
There we go.
Awesome title.
Actually, it was to describe a group of some sorority girls I was having dinner with. But I didn't include that story in the book. It just kept the title because I liked it.
Now, you've got 4 mini-comics out now. How long have you been doing minis for?
2 years? 2 years, I think? 4 mini-comics of the comics by Steph Righty and 1 issue of Ghost Comics.
That's right. I forgot about the Ghost Comics.
It's okay.
Or I didn't include that in my tabulation. So, what got you into doing mini-comics?
I had come to a couple of the Vancouver Comic Cons before, and I liked seeing everybody's stuff, and just knowing that everybody out here is doing stuff like that is really inspiring and just motivating. You know, if they can do it, I can do it kind of thing. And even though, you know, my stuff might not be all that great right now, it's just fun to know that you can do it and check it out, try the scene.
Your stuff, it's mainly humor, just like quick humor, gag stuff, right? For the most part.
For the most part, yeah, just gags and just little things that happen in my life or maybe also sad things, but mostly funny things.
Like your trip to Japan, there's a little bit about that.
Yeah, I had, I was working in Japan for 2 months last year and then I included some things that happened in 2 comics.
Was that a pretty important event in your life? The trip to Japan?
I think so. I think it was because, well, it's pretty much 2 months with my manager and the entirety of Japan, and I didn't really have anyone to relate to, so I had a lot of time to think. So I got a lot of thinking done during that trip.
What stores can we find your minis at?
The comic shop, Lucky's Comics, RX Comics, and sometimes Zulu Records.
Zulu.
Sometimes, although
wow.
I got scared off a couple of times.
Were they mean?
Not outright.
They were snobby.
Maybe a little bit, but they look good doing it.
Sometimes you work at the comic shop too, right?
I do. In the summertime, I work there on Sundays, but once school comes back, I will be working at the comic shop way more often.
What do you do in school?
I'm in Emily Carr. I'm going into my 2nd year, going into animation.
Oh, okay. There's a lot of local cartoonists that are just recently finished or currently enrolled in the Emily Carr animation program.
Yeah, we've got the Radar Friends, who actually were a big inspiration, and I know Julian Lawrence is taking some more classes.
Is he?
Yeah, at Emily Carr. He's trying to get his doctor's, I think.
He's like fantastic cartoonist, Drippy
Town.
Yeah,
Drippy Town. I started reading Drippy Town a long time ago. Another one, just like, this is from Vancouver? I'm from Vancouver, kind of like, this is awesome! And pretty much.
Nice. I'm totally brain dead today. So, freaking late. You're pretty much at every Comic-Con. You went down to Seattle. That was your first experience doing a real comic convention down in Emerald City?
Yeah, it was really crazy. It was so big and different. I think I might prefer to check out maybe Small Press Expo, one of those kinds. Or just.
Are you going to be at the Word Under the Street? Or?
I hope so. I did attend last year and checked it out, and it was a lot of fun. When is that happening, by the way?
September 30th.
I'll see.
And then the same weekend is Stumptown in Portland.
Is which one?
Stumptown.
Oh, yeah, I have heard of that one, too. Okay, yeah. Maybe Word Under the Street. I'll have to look into it, actually. Yeah. Thanks for the reminder.
Oh, just need to talk to Laura. Thank you for taking the time to kind of chat about your comics a little. And you have a piece in the new Discord, or in last month's Discord. Not this month, but you're in the last month's.
Yeah.
So people feel like checking it out. There's a lot of CITR listeners that hopefully read the Discorder.
Good magazine.
It is. Every month's got an Inkstuds article, and that guy's a fantastic writer.
So great.
He's incredible.
So good looking.
Now you're on drugs. Now, I do quite enjoy your minis. And
thank you.
Yeah, no, there's some, I enjoy that just fun. Not necessarily gross fun, like Johnny Ryan fun. I love the Johnny Ryan stuff, though. A little caveat, but it's a nice little, you know, adds to the spice of variety of the Vancouver mini-comic scene.
Cool. I'd like to think so.
I'd like to think so.
Keep doing it.
Well, everyone check it out.
Excellent. Thanks so much.
I'm little, wanna play me like a fiddle. I'm not so brittle, consider my skittle. Cause there's only one peach with a hole in the middle. There's only one peach with a hole in the middle. There's only one peach with a hole in the middle. You think I'm little, wanna play me like a fiddle. I'm not so brittle, come ditto, my skittle. Cause there's only one peach with a hole in the middle. There's only one peach with a hole in the middle. I'm little, wanna play me like a fiddle. I'm not so brittle, consider my skittle. Cause there's only one peach with a hole in the middle. There's only one peach with a hole in the middle. Hole in the middle. Yeah. Right, peach, yeah, and one, right, yeah. You think I'm little, wanna play me like a fiddle. I'm not so brittle, consider my skittle. Cause there's only one peach with the hole in the middle. There's only one peach with the hole in the middle. There's only one peach with the hole in the middle. There's only one peach with the hole in the middle. There's only one peach with the hole in the middle.
This is Inkstud, CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, and once again, I'm sitting around at the Comics and Stories Convention with nothing better to do but talk to talented people. My latest guest is Carrie McKay, whose comic Clam Juice is a B.B. Glockner-esque journey into the extreme.
To the extreme perversion.
Extreme perversion. Tell us about Clam Juice.
Well, essentially, it's...
Listener discretion be advised.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it to a bare minimum. It's a little bit of girl on girl, a little bit of guy on girl. First issue is about 16 pages of black and white. And yeah, it's just no holds barred, whatever I thought would be sexy and hot, put in there.
Nice. So you're like the rest of my guests today, you're relatively new to the mini comic scene.
Very new.
Very new. How are you feeling for us, the artistic outlet? Because you're training. I know you did painting schooling and stuff.
Yes.
And does that translate well to your comics?
Maybe not so much the painting, but definitely being on the regimen of getting things done and stuff. That definitely helped. Just having to be organized and learning the process and staying with it. And since I'm surrounded by all the other local comic guys and comic artists, I kind of have to show them what I'm doing, so it helps keep me on task, so.
Nice. What else you got? Clam Juice and Fissure Lester's zine?
Yeah, that's like a more personal, just whatever I wanted to put in a zine. I got two issues of that so far. I started the German Jacket Press with some like smaller little comic zines, and that's how I've got a website.
Those are like wallet-sized comics?
Yeah, and they got like the different, some are dirty, some are perverted, but... summer
summer tea. Tree, summer
summer boat. Yeah, summer, a lot of them are both, so yeah, a little bit of everything. Some of them are just cute, so I don't like to talk about those ones too much, but they're there.
Not cute ones.
So, yeah.
So you got a pretty voluminous output then for just starting. You've been kind of just pumping it out, eh?
I think so. Well, I haven't been working, so I think that helps a lot.
Have you been getting a lot of good feedback with some of the other folks in town, and has it been well learning from other people, just seeing what they're doing?
Yeah, overall it's been really positive, and yeah, just seeing the amount of stuff and the range that other people put out and stuff has really keep me on task and inspired me and stuff, so I like to shoot for at least what everyone else is doing, and then, you know, whatever I do on top of that is just...
gravy?
Yeah, gravy.
Just gravy. And I have to point out that, your outfit today, you're looking like a 15-year-old
Japanese porn love doll.
Why?
Why?
Sales.
And actually, it's working very well. So, I didn't even care about making sales today, kind of. I was kind of just wanted to use this to go and dress up and wear pink hair and a short skirt and big boots and stuff, so, yeah, that's working out pretty well.
Well, will we see equally odd outfits at future Comic-Cons?
I think so. I think, considering the good response I've got, I think this is going to be a habit, so.
Well, come down to future comic conventions. Are you going to be at Word Under the Street?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. So people come down, check it out, see what the hell Carrie's up to, and
what costume I'm wearing, how short my skirt is, la la la.
You heard it there, boys and ghouls. Inkstud.chr, 101. Oh, where can we find your comics?
I have a small website, germanjacketpress.googlepages.com right now, and I'll link to the clam juice from it and stuff, so.
Excellent. And we'll have it linked Okay. We'll have a link to the website. Thank you, Carrie.
Thank you, Robin.
And keep getting into trouble. CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. This is my last of my many interviews at the Comics and Stories Convention at Heritage Hall with Bill Barrett, my favorite friend from Ireland, with a stack of awesome minis. If you look in the new Discord, there'll be a nice review of some of them in it. And so, Phil, welcome to Vancouver.
Why, thank you, Robin, and thank you for the very generous introduction.
So tell us about your work. Black Shapes?
Blackshapes.com is the website. That's just a general sort of image blog. It's really just stuff that I've done lately, sort of up updates, and at the moment there's a lot of old stuff that probably won't see print. I sort of like to keep it a little bit separate from the stuff I actually put in the mini, so that people have like an object that is different to the web.
Now, your main series, it's a Matter, right?
Yeah, that was sort of the name for it. It's really just a sort of grab bag of different stories. There's no real continuity between any of it. It's really just any sort of longer pieces that I'm working on. I kind of throw them all in there. I haven't actually done one lately. I've been, the last thing I did was the Black Shapes comic, which was sort of like a single issue thing. And the next few things I'm working on are probably going to be single issues as well, I'd imagine. But
mini comic size, or?
Yeah, mini comic size, I think, again. I'm really just sort of working me chops up at the moment, trying to get the skills together. And, you know, it's each one, I think, kind of seems to look at a different side. Some of them, I tend to, the artwork gets better, the story not so. Other ones, the story not isn't great, but the artwork is nice, and so on.
A lot of your stories are kind of focused on, kind of, I guess, introspection. And kind of introspective, like, looking into your, like...
True, kind of, I guess. I sort of see them as more... I suppose they're sort of observational. It's sort of looking out from inside. I've been trying to avoid it. I have a tendency to go towards, sometimes, get a bit maudlin, but... trying to temper that with a bit of humor.
Is it a way of you just kind of exercise ideas?
I think so. Usually, you see, these all start for me like with sort of nuggets of an image, like, and I don't really sit down and say I'm going to do a story about something. I keep a lot of sketchbooks of a lot of these sort of. Usually, I draw on the backs of scrap pieces of office paper. It's like the stuff that's thrown away at work. I basically take anything from the recycling bin and I paste them together, because I don't get so precious about what I draw when I have like a rough piece of paper, as opposed to a sort of a pristine sketchbook.
Crystal board.
Exactly. So I get these ideas, little images, little snippets of dialogue and conversations, and it's sort of... Like, I have bunches of sketchbooks with loads of different ideas, and then I end up kind of sifting through them every so often and go, oh, well, I could take these two and sort of put them together. It might make an interesting story. And it's like putting together a jigsaw, really, rather than, you know, saying I'm going to do a story about a guy going out in the piss for a night and realizing that his life is a mess. It's more like I kind of take these little snippets and observations of things that you'd see, and they mostly gel together, but it can be a sort of a, it can backfire on you that way of working as well.
How much of it is autobiography and how much is just narrative fiction?
I would say a lot of it is stuff I've seen, but I sort of imagine myself looking from different viewpoints, you know, so it's not like, some of it is things that I would think, but other things are, I kind of, it's what I think someone else might think. So it's not hugely autobiographical, to be honest.
I'm just curious about making the distinction, because a lot of people, when they see just stories about people and relationships, the predominant focus is the expectation that it's autobio. So if it's no one, I think it's important people to kind of see that, because it's kind of look outside of the box of like being able to tell a story about people and not have to be that person, I guess.
That's,
I think it's a good talent
true.
To have.
Yeah, I suppose I'm sort of a quite not a secretive. I'd say I'm a private person in a lot of ways. And I'd like to do it sometimes. I'm actually sort of knocking together a story at the moment that is real straight autobiography, just to see. But
how long is the piece going to be?
It would actually be, you know, it's probably about 12, 15 pages. I'm just writing out the pieces of it at the moment. But there's something about it that's not so satisfying, because when it comes from me, I'm sort of putting these little judgmental things in there as well, and my own take in the past. So it seems a little more like I'm sort of forcing my ideas a lot more, rather than in the more observational things, just letting people read it and sort of make up their own mind what the character is thinking.
Nice. And you're going to be taking some time off work to...
I am. Yeah, I was sort of Well, I kind of do freelance stuff, so I'm taking a move into doing a lot more of that. So I'm hoping, the plan is that it'll give me more time for drawing. Yeah, it's discipline, really, is the main thing. It's tough, like, doing a day job and then coming home and working at night. Like, it's very difficult.
Are you going to be bored under the street?
Absolutely. Yeah, I should have something new for that one. Yeah.
And as well, you will have a piece in the Instead's art show.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Looking forward to that one. I have a few things in mind already.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, we're looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun show.
Thanks very much, Robin. Your patronage is much appreciated.
Well, thank you for your kind words, Phil. You never say bad anything about anyone.
Same, man. Cheers.
At age 14, maybe.